Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. If you'd like to call into the show, our phone lines will be open all throughout the show. 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us if you'd like to, if you get a question. It's radio@agphd.com or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty or Brian Hefty. So today we're going to talk a little about flag leaf fungicides in wheat, but we'll talk fungicides in general. Before we get to that, though, Darren, I wanted to talk real quick because I saw something this morning. Somebody published some article about killing corn if you want to replant corn. So let's say you have hail, you have flood go through, you have crusting, I mean, whatever, the germination was poor. You don't like your corn stand. And rather than soybeans, you can just interseed some soybeans. It's no big deal. Can't do that with corn or you're not going to have a very good crop. So there are a lot of people that have asked us this question, all right, what do we go in with? And the reason why I bring this up today is because there's a lot of bad information out there. So this one, there were two things, Darren, that I saw. One, they said, okay, you can spray Roundup if it's, you know, not Roundup corn, but you have to worry about the residual. I'm like, oh my goodness, what kind of nonsense is that? There's no residual with Roundup, 0, 0, 0. There's none. So you can plant the same day. You could have planted 5 days early. As long as the new corn isn't out of the ground, you can kill the old corn if it is not tolerant to Roundup. The other thing that they said was they just mentioned like Fusilade or Select Max or any of those. Now, those legitimately do have some residual. So we're going to tell you to wait a week after you spray those to plant. Well, that's not good. You probably don't want to wait a week at this point. So then you're kind of down to tillage. We've tried Gramoxone, Liberty. You can burn stuff to the ground, but are you really going to kill that growing point? I don't know. I mean, if it's me, I'm probably just going out with tillage. What do you think, Darren?
That's a safe bet. Yep. That doesn't have the downside risk. And it brings up a conversation I was having this morning with a really young agronomist who's just been in the industry for a few years. And he was mentioning how nice the root systems look on crop in his area, but the top growth is really small. And, you know, just asking some pretty basic questions. What's going on here? How come my root system looks so good this year compared to what I've seen in the past? And how come my top growth is so slow to come along? And we just talked through, you know, obviously we haven't had enough heat yet and we aren't getting a lot of growing degree units, and that makes a big difference above ground. But below ground, some of it came down to just ideal planting conditions where this agronomist was from. They just had fantastic conditions, never missed a day, planted, everything was perfect, and the root system had zero restriction and grew great. And I just asked him a question. I said, what was planting like last year in your area? He goes, oh man, it was terrible. We mudded in virtually everything. I said, exactly. That's why you don't mud things in. Look at what happened with the root system. We just had a tough time getting good root system development. We had all kinds of issues with the crop the rest of the year because of it. Now we've got a situation where, sure, it's been a little cool. We're going to start collecting heat. But experience shows us that, you know, eventually we're going to get at least some growing degree unit accumulation. Maybe it won't be 90 degrees every day, but at least it's going to be 75 or 80, and the crop's going to push along. It may be a little slow this year, and that's, well, it just is what it is. We can't do a whole lot about that. But what you can do is make sure that you're managing the crop well through the season. We just talked about, hey, after you have 10 years of experience, 20 years of experience, 30 years of experience, you're going to see good conditions, bad conditions. You're going to see enough rotations of that, oh, okay, I'm ready for the next time and I've got some good advice. Like you're talking about with replanting corn, there are a lot of people out there, Brian, who have never had to do it.
Exactly.
And so it's just, well, common sense would say I could just spray one of these volunteer corn killers. Hey, guess what? They will kill the corn, no doubt. But if they hurt your next crop coming up, that's not a good deal. And guess how we know all this stuff? We've seen people do it over the last 20 plus years. So don't be a statistic. Play it safe. You know what? If you can get the crop in just a couple of days later because you had to wait for something to wear off, that's fine. Or you can say, you know what? I want to get it done today. Great. Do the tillage. Till it up. Get back in and plant.
One of the things that I really appreciate now is just, okay, so I've been a full-time agronomist for 30 years this year. 30. But it's like it's 300 years or maybe 3,000 years of experience. And the reason why is because we get to deal with farmers all over the country and all over the world. And when you get exposed to all these different geographies, weather conditions, situations, I mean, it's so fun. So I really enjoy learning. And then that's what both Darren and I enjoy doing is sharing this information, because there's a lot of terrible information that's going to get you in trouble. So that's why when you've got a question, just ask us. We're more than happy to help you out with this. That's what our show is all about, whether it's the radio show here or the television show. We're just trying to talk through all of these experiences that we've had with farmers all over the world over the last 30 years. So hopefully you don't run into those same problems. So, you know, one of the things you mentioned, though, Darren, is you said, okay, over whatever, 20 years, I think you said, you're going to have hot, dry, cold, wet. I mean, you're going to have all these different conditions. Well, I want to come back to, you said, mudding the crop in last year. Now, if mudding the crop in is something where you have to almost question it every year, well, do I mud the crop in or do I keep waiting? Why don't you do something about it? So like on our farm in 2007, we bought a tile plow. We also started learning more about soil fertility, that the two big things that will reduce that issue for you, in addition to drainage, okay, we fixed the tile problem, compaction. And why do we have compaction? Well, a lot of it comes back to organic matter and calcium in the soil. Now, sure, we all know that you're going to reduce compaction by staying off the field when it's wet. But let's talk about getting the field less wet. Tile, calcium, organic matter. If you can work on those things, then you're not going to fix, well, the tile you can fix instantly, but the calcium and the organic matter, you're not going to fix probably instantly, but you can fix it over time and you start working on it. 5 years, it gets better. 10 years, it gets great. And all of a sudden, a lot of these issues go away. Like last year, I was just talking to a guy, we planted most of our crop last year, even though a lot of this ground around here went prevent plant, we planted most things relatively on time last year, and it's because of tile, calcium, organic matter. Well, we'll talk about fungicides next.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Ultra Blazer!
Kind of sounds like the name of a superhero, doesn't it? Well, to soybean growers, it is.
Because Ultra Blazer from UPL controls the toughest weeds, including pigweed, ragweed, and water hemp. And you can make it part of your resistance management program on all trait-based beans, even dicamba tolerant. Plus, with Ultra Blazer, there are no plant back concerns. Talk about superpowers. To learn more, contact your crop protection consultant or dealer. Always read and follow label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio. Today we are excited to talk about flag leaf protection in wheat. When we get to flag leaf, man, we've got it all out there. The plant's all out there. It's ready to go. We've got that engine ready to catch sunlight, to produce a lot of yield for us, but we've got to protect it. We can't afford disease at this time of year. Got TJ Benz with us right now with Syngenta down in Kansas. TJ, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. I'm excited to talk about this flagleaf fungicide selection that farmers need to make because there are new modes of action out there. There are new products. You've got an exciting new product that personally I was hoping to save for heading, but here we are at flagleaf, and a lot of guys will like to spray both timings, flagleaf and heading. Some guys want to just spray once. It's a complicated discussion.
Yeah, it's real complicated, and there's a lot of decisions that have to go into that because there's times where if you're trying to wait till just doing one at heading, if you've got enough rust coming in, you might not have anything left by the time you get to that point.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Okay. Well, it's this tight, narrow window, too, where, you know, if I skip this one, I just got to make it a couple of weeks here, and it'll be perfect for coming out there at heading. So let's talk about this flagleaf thing because at this point, the way I understand it, TJ, all options are on the table, and you can pretty much spray just about anything, but if you could get something that has some good residual, that would be a plus.
Definitely, because otherwise you're just taking care of the problem you have today and not worrying about tomorrow. So we really need something that will get to that heading time and even probably a little bit past that.
Okay, so talk to me about Miravis Ace a little bit because I like that one at heading time. I like the protection from Fusarium head blight. What about if I'm putting something else on earlier? Do I have to rotate modes of action? Because you've got three in that Miravis Ace. Do I use something like Trivapro early? Are we still using something like Quilt? What do you like to see at flagleaf?
So it just kind of depends. I mean, I personally, if you're really worried about the rust species, I want Trivapro on at that point in time. Now, we don't have to always go that full 13.7 ounce rate. I mean, we do have on the label, we can go the 9.4 ounces if you're not looking for an extended residual. So that might be a great option to save a couple pennies on the way there, but it should give you plenty of time to get to that Miravis Ace timing.
You know, when I think about the strobes, we hear a lot of guys talk about, well, I don't want to use them once I get to heading. I'd prefer to use that at my flagleaf timing. What's been your experience?
Yeah, and that's exactly the way I would look at it, too. And that's why Miravis Ace, we did not have a strobe in that. We have Tilt and Adepidin, so the SDHI inhibitor. So it does not have a strobe in it at all.
All right, so if I'm spraying at flagleaf, a lot of growers will ask the question, well, don't I get enough residual to take me further? Can you explain a little bit why we might need to spray at both timings?
Well, it's because, you know, when you're looking at scab or Fusarium head blight, that plant is actually getting infected as it's blooming. And so when we're making those applications, it's really not the right product, number one, because there's just not a whole lot of products out there that have activity on Fusarium. The other thing is we don't have that head exposed most of the time when we're making these flagleaf applications, so we aren't getting the product onto the head as well.
All right, when we get to corn and we start talking about the reproductive stages, we get nervous about different surfactants and different things that might get mixed in. How about on wheat? Is there an issue here if we mixed in a nutrient or if we mixed in an insecticide?
No, not at all. I mean, I had a conversation with a consultant the other day. I said I've never seen hollow husk in wheat, so I think we're good to go.
Excellent. Well, TJ Benz of Syngenta down in Kansas, any last comments that you've got for us on this or anything that we didn't cover about flagleaf fungicides?
Yeah, so the thing that people need to remember about flagleaf fungicides is if you're waiting until you see the disease on your plant, you're already too late. That plant's been infected. That's why we make our recommendations, whether it's with Quilt XL or Trivapro for those flagleaf, is make that application at 50% flagleaf emergence. That way you can protect yourself to get to that heading point in time.
Great stuff there. Yeah, and that's a great point to end on as well. We've got to get that spray out there before we see disease or we're way too late. TJ, thank you so much. Appreciate having you on. Good luck here the rest of the spring.
Thank you.
Said back down to Kansas. We've got Chris with us right now with a question on volunteer corn. Brian, see, there you go. You opened a can of worms, Brian. All right, Chris, what have you got?
You know, kind of like what you guys are talking about, there's a lot of corn that went in last year and, you know, even maybe this year that's had in the, you know, subpar conditions that guys wanted to go back in and replant without tillage. Where I am in Kansas, moisture is a pretty sparse at some times. So, you know, no-till is pretty heavily here. I was wondering what you guys thought about running Sharpen to kill last, you know, the first corn crop prior to going into that second corn crop.
Yeah, and I apologize, we didn't mention that in our first segment today, but we look at Sharpen very much like how we look at Liberty and Gramoxone, and we did mention Liberty and Gramoxone. For all of those, they are much more contact killers than anything else. So with Sharpen, the nice thing is it would have residual that would help your next corn crop, and it would kill the broadleaf weeds out there. But Sharpen's going to burn stuff down if the foliage is out and exposed. It may or may not fully get down in and kill that growing point. And that's the concern that we would have trying to kill that corn off. So, Darren, do you think that Sharpen would be better than Liberty or Gramoxone, or do you think you wouldn't see much difference?
I don't know if it'd be a whole lot different.
That's my feeling. So, I mean, it's certainly worth a try.
I wish it would. Like you say, if you can also do something positive for your crop of getting some residual herbicide out there at the same time, that'd be awesome. I just don't know that it's going to wipe out that corn like you're hoping.
Hey, you know, Darren, this is one of the things we haven't talked about, but let's say I've got corn plants with uneven emergence. So we've been discussing this for many years now, that if a corn plant comes out one or two leaf stages behind, it's a weed. But what happens if, let's say we had that, and then we literally mowed everything down? So now we were all starting. I realize you can't change the stage you're at. One's at V3, one's at V2, one's at V1. But is it really a shading thing? Do you think that would matter? We've never done that.
I think that'd be a great trial to do on some of your ground,
yep, I think,
Brian.
We need to do that. But anyway, where I was going with that, Chris, is even if we didn't kill it, if we burned it back to the ground again, at least it's going to be closer to where those other plants are coming up. But yeah, I mean, I don't see Sharpen, Liberty, or Gramoxone working perfectly, but I absolutely have had guys use Liberty and use Gramoxone, and they've said, yeah, it worked okay. So I think Sharpen, I would feel like, yeah, it's going to work okay.
Right. Well, perfect. I appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
You know, that root system, I look at it this way, Brian. We have seen hail. And when you've got hail, that does kind of even up
the
above
ground.
If it wiped it out to the ground and it didn't kill the growing point.
I know, but we haven't compared ears.
We
haven't compared ears to the end of the season, and that's the whole thing. So years ago, we started doing this where we were showing, and we were doing a lot of work with Case IH and planting, and I remember one year we had a Determinator planter and everything. It's probably 10, 15 years ago. And anyway, we were showing, okay, if it's one leaf behind, here's what the ear looks like. If it's two leaves behind, here's what the ear looks like. And it's terrible. I mean, really, really terrible. But we never have tracked it where we've evened stuff up. I want to do that. In fact, I'm going to write that down. That's going to be one of our trials we're going to run this year. So I want to see if with uneven emergence, we could make it be better if we basically mowed it off. You got to try crazy stuff. Otherwise, how do you know?
There you go, Brian. You can definitely do that. All right, let's get back to the flag leaf discussion. And TJ Benz had a lot of good stuff there talking about targeting 50% flag leaf emergence, and you're really only protecting the plant tissue that you're covering and getting out there early. I think those are three of the real key messages here with flag leaf fungicide applications. We got to be on a little bit on the early side, and you can pretty much use any product you want, but if you've got a little bit of residual to carry that forward, that's great.
Well, the whole thing is, when you look at the three basic timings for fungicides in wheat, it's herbicide timing, flag leaf timing, and heading. The flag leaf timing is when the fewest number of people spray, in the United States anyway, I don't know how it is all around the world, but in the United States, the fewest number of people spray at flag leaf, yet that's where, when I look at a lot of the research data, that's where we show the most yield gain. The flag leaf is the most important leaf on that wheat, and I realize a heading treatment's probably going to be worth it, and a herbicide treatment's probably going to be worth it, but consider that flag leaf treatment. We'll talk more about it right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for heads-up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPhD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Broadcasting live from the Morton studio, talking about flag leaf fungicides and other considerations for wheat. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We've got Stephen Wegulo with us right now with University of Nebraska. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Yep.
All right, talking about flag leaf in wheat, obviously a very important stage in terms of protecting that plant and optimizing our yield. We're focusing on fungicides. Of course, there's other things to talk about here too. Where do you want to start with flag leaf wheat?
Well, just to mention that, as you said, the flag leaf is very important because just the flag leaf alone and the head, they contribute 75% of the yield. So it's really important to protect that flag leaf from fungal diseases. The criteria to use when considering to protect that flag leaf with a fungicide are you have to have disease present. So we don't usually recommend just spraying if there's disease is absent. And then if the weather is forecast to be wet, which favors disease, that's also a criterion that can be considered when deciding to apply a fungicide to the flag leaf, to the crop to protect the flag leaf. And then if a susceptible variety is planted, because we have many different varieties, some have resistance to some diseases and some are susceptible. So if a variety that is known to be susceptible to a specific disease, for example, stripe rust, then that variety, if weather is conducive to disease, then that variety should be sprayed. And then for the fungal leaf spot diseases, like Septoria leaf blotch, tan spot, And also another disease that we don't talk much about is called powdery mildew. Those fungal leaf spots and powdery mildew, they normally start in the lower canopy and they work their way up towards the flag leaf. So if the level of fungal leaf spots or powdery mildew is low and is confined to the lower canopy and is not threatening the flag leaf, then you might consider probably not applying a fungicide, especially if the weather is dry. But if the weather is wet, you definitely need to be thinking about putting a spray to protect the flag leaf. And then reports from southern states, Texas, Kansas, Oklahoma. So right now we know that there is stripe rust in Kansas. And so we expect stripe rust to move to northern states, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota later in the season. And if you hear that there is stripe rust in the southern states, you need to keep an eye and scout. The scouting is really important to enable you to make a decision whether to apply a fungicide or not.
You know, Stephen, you mentioned watching the weather in the southern states, and that's what we've gotten you at Nebraska for, because we're in South Dakota. So we just watch and see when it comes through Kansas and starts creeping up into Nebraska and you start putting out those alerts. That's when it triggers an application up here for us, too. Hey, one last question for you. As you're spraying these fungicides, as you're trying to protect from these diseases, is there a certain disease that you would say robs yield more than the others? Is it stripe rust? Is that about the worst one?
You are right on the point. Stripe rust, if it occurs and the weather is favorable, which means cool temperatures and a lot of moisture, that disease, stripe rust, can be very damaging, can be devastating, more so than the other diseases that I mentioned. So if stripe rust is confirmed in a field, and those conditions are existing, the cool temperatures, wetness, then definitely I would recommend spraying for stripe rust to protect the flag leaf.
Well, and like you mentioned too, we get a good heads up that we're already seeing some in Kansas, so definitely we have to be on the watch out for stripe rust this year. Talking to Stephen Wagulo at the University of Nebraska, the pathology department there does a great job. Really appreciate having you on, Stephen, and have a great spring.
You too. Thank you.
Let's head up to our neighbors to the north. Now, I was mentioning that we kind of watch what goes on in Nebraska. I think the guys up north watch what happens in South Dakota to see when disease is heading their way. We've got Andrew Friskap with us with North Dakota State University. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, personally, I hope stripe rust doesn't hit either of us this year, but it's certainly a concern for the growers in the area that we're seeing it further south. So talk to us about that. Is there kind of a time window that North Dakota farmers will use, a couple of weeks maybe, if you see disease like that in Kansas, or is it just one storm away from getting to you?
Yeah, those are all great questions. Hypothetically, you can say it's one massive storm system that kind of moves from the south and pushes north that could bring spores into us. But what we've seen over the last couple of years, we usually need a couple days or a couple of storm events like that to push some of those spores. And like you mentioned, you're using Nebraska for your forecasting system. I similarly looked at my counterparts in South Dakota to see what they're seeing. And back in 14 and then 2015, we had an early occurrence in that tillering growth stage. And that's when we saw some of our most significant yield losses in the state.
So I've got some questions for you. One of them being flag leaf timing in North Dakota. Is that a popular timing for growers to apply product? And then in your research, is that the time we should be considering as the most important timing?
Yeah, I think right now for growers that I talk to each year in North Dakota, I think flag leaf is probably the least routine fungicide application. Certainly when we think about it, we have that tank mix with the herbicide. We have a fungicide going down, and Fusarium head blight is always one of our most cornerstone fungicide applications. But when questions come up on flag leaf fungicides is when we have a rust year, or when we have those situations where Mother Nature's throwing all the different types of weather patterns that's increasing our disease risk, you can see some benefits from a flag leaf fungicide. And some of the research that we've conducted here at NDSU, if I had to put some percentages on what could you expect from a fungicide application at flag leaf, when you're in that low to moderate risk zone, meaning that you either have a resistant variety or you just don't have those conducive conditions, really that flag leaf application might give you a bushel, bushel and a half. But when you see those high disease risk in, situations such as rust being documented early in the season, you can see up to a 10% type of increase in that with that application. So, again, you know, I hate to say it, but it depends on the year. But really, when I look at flag leaves and the use of it, it really is going to depend on what we're seeing in the field and also how progressive some of these growers are.
I'm not disappointed that you say that, Andrew, because I hear a lot of people say, well, farming should be easy, right? You just do the same thing every year. And I say, whoa, we never get the same weather year after year. It's always different. There's always new challenges. And I look at North Dakota this year, as wet as it's been across much of the state, that's got to present some challenges in terms of more possibility of disease, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think right now we're flirting around the 50% planted acreage, and we could certainly think of weather conditions right now as being a driver for some of the disease, but I look at planting dates a lot too, because some of the history that I've had in this position is the later our planting date is, especially with our wheat crop, the greater risk we might see with some of these diseases, and it's just not some of these foliar diseases that we pick up when it gets a little bit warmer, a little bit more humid, but certainly as we start getting around the everybody's favorite 4th of July disease and fusarium head blight. So, you know, if I had a crystal ball approach, I can say I will guarantee at least seeing some tan spot. We're probably going to see some rust. I just can't put my finger on where that's going to be the first detection and when that's going to occur.
Andrew Friskop with North Dakota State University. Great stuff, Andrew. Thank you so much. Good luck. Hopefully you get some sunshine up in North Dakota and disease isn't a big issue up there.
Thank you. Appreciate it for having me on.
We're talking about flag leaf fungicides for wheat on our show today. Our phone lines are also open. If you have an agronomic question, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to just join in on this discussion, that's fine too. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Did planting conditions stink on your farm this year? If you had trouble closing your seed trench, your planter needs Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. Don't let your planter disappoint you again. Fix the problem today. Order your Germinators now at farmshopmfg.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo. And it's burned down and long-lasting residual powers, making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
When it comes to leading herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Cheetah, a high-quality glufosinate herbicide made right here in the USA. Now for use on a wide variety of crops with glufosinate-resistant traits, including Enlist crops. Its novel mode of action will manage existing or emerging herbicide resistance and provide fast, effective results. This means you can focus more on profitability and less on weeds. Nufarm and Cheetah Herbicide, here to help.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Martin Studio today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty.
So, Darren, just to finish up on this flagleaf fungicide talk, the key things I wanted to stress are, number one, we are big believers in spraying at flagleaf if you've had a history of disease, if you are planting a susceptible variety, if the weather is conducive for disease, and basically by conducive, I mean damp. That's really the number one thing, damp, and let's call them moderate temperatures. If it's super hot and dry, you have a lot less chance for disease. So you got to use your head a little bit, because the whole thing is you can't scout for disease. You got to spray in advance. It makes it so challenging. You know, with herbicide or insecticide, in a lot of cases, we can go out to the field. We can see, hey, do we have a problem, or do we have a growing problem or whatever? And we can pull the trigger based on an economic threshold. We just can't do that with disease. If you spray after you see a bunch of disease, you're already too late. You already lost a lot of yield. The main thing, if you're going to spray at flagleaf timing, and in a lot of cases we do recommend it, but if you're going to spray, we would highly encourage you use a multiple mode of action product. So, for example, I really like Nexacor from BSF. That's one of my favorite ones because it's got three modes of action. Trivapro from Syngenta,
and it's,
three
and
modes
it's
of action.
Right.
Oh, yeah, the Nexacor price is fantastic. Stratego, two modes of action. I mean, there are many two mode of action products you could use. But the point is, don't just use one mode of action. Use two, if not three. And then the last thing that I would say is use the full rate. Early on at herbicide timing, I'm all for using a low rate. You can, because the plant's small. Well, by flagleaf, now you got a big plant, and we've got a lot to protect there. We want to do everything we can to have good. Let's put it this way. If that flagleaf is clean, you're going to have higher yields. And we want to make sure that flagleaf gets clean and stays clean. And you absolutely can do that with a lot of different fungicides. So we're not going to specifically get into, well, we think this is the best fungicide. It depends a lot on what variety you have, what disease you have. I mean, anything could happen, but I will just tell you, use multiple modes of action and you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. Use some of the newer products. That's most likely going to give you a better chance for success. And yes, fungicide prices did come down, and in some cases down a long ways this year. So it is less expensive to spray almost any fungicide this year than it was last year. All right, Darren, anything else on flagleaf fungicides in wheat?
You know, coverage is always an important thing, too.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that didn't really get mentioned today. Using the right spray tips, getting smaller droplets, and trying to get some coverage. We had a couple of different times, and I believe it was Stephen Wagulo that mentioned, we have these diseases that work their way up the plant. And if you get something like a tan spot or Septoria leaf spot or even stripe rust, that can move up the plant. So if you've got that penetration down through the canopy to get good coverage even on a lower part of the plant, that would be ideal if at all possible.
All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, first question comes from Tony. He said, you were talking about hemp sesbania the other day, and this plant actually fixes a lot of nitrogen. There are some who are considering it a potential cover crop. Have you guys done any trials with using hemp sesbania as a cover crop?
No, we haven't, but that brings up an interesting point. How are you going to kill whatever you raise as a cover crop? Always have that in mind before you seed a cover crop. Know what your rotation is most likely going to be, know what your herbicide options are, and how long you could potentially be facing that weed in your crop. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of plants, well, most plants have a purpose and could do some good somewhere. But even like corn, okay, corn is the number one acreage crop in the United States. But guess what? In soybeans or wheat or a lot of other crops, corn is considered a weed and I want to kill it. So, I mean, it's the same thing with the hemp sesbania here. Yep. It could potentially be a cover crop for you, but just make sure that you have a good way to control it. I'm not terribly worried about hemp sesbania. Usually it's not that difficult to control, so I don't have any real big concerns or anything. But like I say, just make sure you know what your rotation most likely will be and how you will most likely want to get that under control. Now, if you are looking for, well, what do I need to kill hemp sesbania? Just go to the Ag PhD Field Guide app, and you can pull up under that hemp sesbania as a weed, and you can see how we would encourage you to control that best in corn, wheat, or soybeans.
Thanks for the question. Got this one from John, and he said, I've got nut sedge, and it's out of control in a few areas in two fields. I'm wondering what would be the best things to spray, and should I expect it to take several years to really get the problem under control?
What crop?
Doesn't mention.
Okay. So we just had a question on this. I think it was last week.
Yeah, we had a caller. We had a caller talking
exactly.
about it.
Yep, with yellow nutsedge. Okay, so here are the things that we can tell you.
That was in rice, wasn't it? Which
yes.
is a tricky yep. situation because one of the issues yes. we have where yellow nutsedge is they're generally poorly drained.
Right.
So if you've got a spot where soil is often saturated, that gives a competitive advantage to yellow nutsedge, and it gets tough to control in those spots.
Right. So we would, number one, tell you, fix your drainage. And it's like I talked about at the start of the show. That means tile. That means try to improve your organic matter over time. And make sure you have good calcium levels, usually in 65% plus kind of range for calcium on a base saturation test. Okay, beyond that, I would just say, you know, when you start talking perennial weeds, think about how many herbicides kill perennial weeds. Not a lot. So you go, all right, what the heck am I going to do here? Will Roundup work? Yes, Roundup actually will work, but you have to run a very low rate of water and a very high rate of Roundup because yellow nutsedge has waxy leaves and you're not going to get much to stick on there. So you have to make sure that the leaf is fully dry. You can't spray when there's any dew or you will have zero success. But you can use Roundup and it will work, and we've done it ourselves. Otherwise, the products that we talk about quite often are Basagran, Permit, and then as a residual herbicide, Dual. So if Basagran, Permit, or Dual will fit for whatever crop you're using, then great. There are your answers in terms of herbicides. But like Darren said, it's drainage. And, you know, the big thing is we can choke out a lot of weeds if we raise a great crop. Well, if you don't have great drainage, you will not raise a great crop. So do everything you can to get the drainage fixed, have good fertility, try to raise a great crop, and hopefully that alone will choke out your yellow nutsedge, but otherwise, you got some other options.
All right, thanks for the question. Got one from Robert here who's got a garden, and he said, I'm wondering how often should I water my corn plants in my garden? You know, that is one of the tricky things when you've got a bunch of different species of plants out in your garden. They each might need a little different water profile. Some may like to have a lot of water, some may not like to have as much. With corn, it likes to have some moisture. We'd ideally like to see that soil composition around 25% air, 25% water, and 50% soil. So if you could shoot for that, that would be great. I don't know where you're at. I don't know how much heat you're getting, but I'll say this. As that corn gets a little bit taller, its requirement for water is a little bit more. So that's something to think about. You don't want to have the ground super saturated, but if I could dial up an inch of rain a week on my farm, Brian, I think I'd be pretty happy.
I would not be happy, and here's why. Because an inch of rain a week for the first, in our geography, month and a half is going to be too much. When we hit tassel timing, I'd say a week before tassel and 2 weeks after tassel, an inch of rain is not enough. But to your point, it depends on how heavy that soil is and how much water that soil can hold. So it might all turn out fine. But the big thing is don't overdo it in the beginning and make sure you are giving it a fair amount of water once you get to the middle of the season and around that tassel timing.
All right, thanks for the question. Got a bunch more questions to get to here in the Ag PhD mailbag time, but we'll get to them right after this short break. Our phone lines will be open throughout the rest of the show. If you would like to call in with a question, 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, and we've got a number of these emails that we're going to get through here shortly, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipchem Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
How did planting go on your farm this year? Was everything perfect or did conditions stink, leading you to regret your planter's performance? If you had trouble closing your seed trench, your planter needs Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. Plus, with our late season discounts and free shipping, right now is the best time to upgrade. So don't let your planter disappoint you again. Fix the problem today. Order your Germinators now at farmshopmfg.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Corn and soybean growers are in a race against time when it comes to hard-to-kill weeds. Interline herbicide from UPL works fast to eliminate some of the most challenging glyphosate-resistant weeds, including pigweed, water hemp, mare's tail, and ragweed. Interline can be used as a burn-down treatment or as an over-the-top treatment in glufosinate-tolerant crops, including Liberty Link varieties. Ask your retailer or UPL sales representative about Interline, and always read and follow label directions.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, answering your calls and questions throughout the rest of the show. Phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got an email from Billy up in Alberta, it looks like. Said, I was wondering if you could look at some soil tests for me. I'm having trouble growing peas and carrots in my garden, which is on test NW21.
Are you unsure about that, Darren?
Well, it says bees. And so I'm guessing it's either beans or it's peas. I'm not sure
either
which one.
Way, it doesn't
so
make
beans,
a lot of difference.
Peas, carrots. How about all those things, Brent? Actually, that makes a really nice combination for a vegetable at lunch.
Yep, it does. All right, so first of all, we always look at soil pH with beans or peas or carrots, probably not bees necessarily, but beans, peas, and carrots, they would like that soil pH to be in the sixes somewhere. You got a couple of pHs here, 5.6, 5.9, not terrible. You could throw just a splash of lime out there and that would fix that problem. You know, one of the big things that I would see that we often talk about is drainage. We were just mentioning that a couple times in the show already today. You've got one cation exchange capacity where it says 6.7. You're not going to have any drainage issue there. But there's a fair amount of magnesium there, which is actually pretty good. But, you know, normally when we see high magnesium levels, like in his case, he's got 25% base saturation magnesium, we say, ooh, that looks a little much, and we might have a drainage problem. Well, not when your cation exchange capacity is 7 or 6. On the other ones, your cation exchange capacity is 15 or 16, so you got a medium textured soil. So, you know, you could get a little bit more calcium out there. That certainly wouldn't hurt, something like gypsum. Now, as soon as I mentioned gypsum, the other component to gypsum besides calcium is sulfur, and you're very low on sulfur in all your stuff. You're also very low on boron. When I look at your phosphorus levels, they're not terrible by any means. But if it's me and, okay, so did he say garden, by the way?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. When you got a garden, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't cost you many total dollars. Out in a field, I want to do this still, but it takes a lot of dollars to invest. So here's my point. I would get my phosphorus levels. I would try shooting my phosphorus levels up to 100 parts per million. You've got some as low as 24. And I would work on getting my base saturation potassium up to 7% or so. Your carrots especially will really like that. But even the beans and the peas will do much better when you get your potassium levels up, because you've got low potassium in just about all of it. You're down as low as 2.7% base saturation K. So you need more phosphorus, more potassium, more sulfur, more boron. Probably wouldn't hurt if you got a little bit more copper out there. You could stand to use just a little more zinc. I mean, there are many things that certainly could be improved. Oh, and by the way, talking about the zinc, a lot of times we're going to talk 2, 3, 4 parts per million on zinc just as a very, very base. You've got that. So there's not a problem with that. It's just what we then look at is the ratio of phosphorus to zinc. And we usually will talk 10 to 1 for easy math, but you could even be down to 8 to 1, and we've seen some real good results. So if you were at 100 parts per million of phosphorus, for example, that means you'd want to be around 10 or 12 on zinc. And you actually do have a couple that are getting right there. It's just you also have a couple that would be just a little low. So anyway, yes, several things that you could fix, but super easy when you have a garden and we're not talking lots of total dollars.
Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. Thanks for sending the soil test as well. Got this one from Jimmy, who's looking for a quick answer, Brian. He said, all right, let's talk about wheat fungicides. I just want to know what your favorite wheat fungicides are. So I'll give you my list first, and I'll let Brian try and tell me how wrong I am here. At the herbicide timing early in the season, I like Nexacor. That would be my choice. At the flag leaf timing, I like Trivapro. And at the heading timing, I like Proline. I'm sorry, Prosaro.
Okay. Yeah, so at the early stage, yeah, I really like Nexacor because it's like $5. At flagleaf timing, I don't have any problem doing Nexacor again, quite frankly, because it's cheaper than Trivapro, but Trivapro is a good product. I don't really care what you do. And I also like Stratego. So there are a lot of people that are in the Bayer program and they want some Bayer fungicide. So Stratego is a great one either for herbicide timing or flagleaf timing. So quite commonly, what we're finding now is people want to stick with one company rather than switching it up. You can do whatever you want. I don't care. But, you know, if you wanted to stick with Bayer products, then you go Stratego a couple of times, and then you finish off with Prosaro. If, let's say, you wanted to go BSF, you do Nexacor a couple of times, you finish off with Caramba. If you want to go with Syngenta, you can go Stratego a couple of times, Trivapro a couple of times, and then follow with Miravis Ace. So you've got lots of options there, and that's just with three companies. So I don't know. I hate to pick favorites too much, especially when we, quite frankly, don't see lots of differences. As long as you're getting a multiple mode of action product and it's one of the newer ones, I prefer that. So just as an example, when we start talking herbicide timing, there's still a lot of people that like Old Tilt. You can go generic and go a full rate for $2. So they go, well, it's cheap. Yep, it is. It's just not going to be as good as Nexacor for $3 more an acre. So you do whatever you want. If you're, I mean, you already got the trip, and so it's only $3 difference. So run the numbers on your farm. If you can make it pay, great, then do it. If you can't make it pay, then just do the $2 option, whatever. But we are big believers in fungicide, especially in wheat, because think about wheat with that tight canopy, all the moisture it holds in. We do see more disease issues in wheat than most crops.
Thanks for the question, Jimmy. Really appreciate that. Got a couple of different weed questions here for you, weed control questions, and got pictures with them. And the first one comes from Robert up in North Dakota, or I'm sorry, Robert in Wisconsin. And he said, I heard your show on RFD on my way back from my equipment dealer. By the way, they didn't have the part that I needed, so I have to go back again. So maybe, hey, maybe you'll catch the show again, Robert. He said, scouring rush has been trouble for me for a half dozen years. Two areas I really fight it. Underground rhizomes are just a challenge. So he said, this year, I bought a heavy-duty lawnmower. I mowed it very close to the ground, some of it twice. Then I rototilled on little Kubota. Yep, it took a while and close to 4 to 5 inches deep, all in no-till soil. But look at the pictures that I sent. So he sent before and after pictures here. He said, it's not perfect control, but I got 95% control, enough so that I could get a respectable crop in there this year. If it'll just quit raining, I should be able to get it planted soon. And then another one came from Rich, and Rich said, I've got a problem. I wonder what this weed is. We rotate between corn and beans, but we can't seem to get this under control. We're a no-till operation, but we are willing to use some tillage if needed to get rid of this weed. And he sent a picture of a weed that looks very similar to scouring rush. It's field horsetail. Now, Brian was making the comment, I think they're basically the same thing, and really control methods are the same. But just to give you an example, here's what the names are. If you're looking at, well, what's the Latin name for these? Well, we've got Equisetum arvense, and we've got Equisetum hyemale. So they're very close. They're close relatives, and the control is the same.
I know. And I realize I'm wrong in saying this, okay? But I still believe scouring rush and horsetail, field horsetail, are the same thing. I believe water hemp and Palmer pigweed are the same thing.
Coke and just, Pepsi, yeah, just, I get your point,
just
Brian.
Like, I mean, Darren and I are human beings. We do not look the same. So I'm
thank
human being Brian, and he's human being Darren. We're still both human beings, okay? Just like I still think, you know, it's scouring rush and field horsetail, same basic thing. The problem with those weeds, he mentioned it there, it's perennial. It just like yellow nutsedge we were talking about earlier in the show, it likes poor drainage. So in part because not a lot will grow there, so it doesn't have a lot of competition. So again, we'll give you the same recommendation we would on yellow nutsedge in terms of improve the drainage. That means get tile in the ground, look at your calcium and your organic matter, make sure those are as good as they can be over time, and then just do everything you can to raise a great crop. When you do that, usually the field horsetail or scouring rush is going to start to go away. Now, unlike with yellow nutsedge, where we have several fairly decent herbicide options, including Roundup, we really don't have that for scouring rush. Scouring rush has no leaves. It's the weirdest plant, and to try to stick anything on there is very, very difficult. You can try Roundup. I mean, maybe straight Roundup would kill it, but I can't legally recommend that to you. But anyway, we've actually had the best luck with Gramoxone. Now, just like we were saying earlier in the show with Gramoxone, when you're talking about volunteer corn, does it do a great job killing growing points? No. But it can kill some growing points, and it will at least burn stuff down to the ground. There just isn't a lot else that works. Atrazine doesn't work well. 2,4-D doesn't work well. Some guys have said, well, maybe Classic or a First Rate or some of these products. You can try that if you want. I just have never seen anything work much other than Gramoxone. And obviously Gramoxone kills everything, so you have to do it before the crop goes in or after harvest.
Thanks for the question. Really appreciate that. And thanks to everyone who called or sent in questions today. It makes the show fun when we get to try and help people out from all over the country, so that's really cool. Thanks for listening to our show. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.